Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Don't sweat the technique.
Razor Blunt Commentary, delivered with a special purpose.
What's happening to my special purpose?
It's the Killer Bees, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios on ESPN 97.5.
He's Blank, I'm Branham. We are the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, a texter, 713-780-ESPN. Forrest Whitley. Yeah, Whitley would be one of those relievers we were talking about.
Yep. And I'm curious with you guys. I don't have very high expectations at this point because of all we've been through and the roller coaster of Forrest Whitley. It would be fantastic if he honed in on his arm and his ability to throw hard and also locate his pitches. I just don't have a realistic belief that he's a guy that's going to figure it out and be a guy they can count on all year in one of those spots.
Yeah, I'm kind of hedging I think he starts on the opening day roster. I think that they might go with somebody who has a little bit more seasoning that has pitched in the bigs, and then Whitley's like one of the first or second guys that they bring up whenever there are injuries. I firmly believe that we'll see Forrest Whitley pitch with the Astros this year if he stays healthy.
No, I agree with that, but I think that Coleman and Souza, unless they just completely self-destruct during the spring, those are the two guys they'd really like to see be the veterans in the middle of that bullpen along with Montero that they can kind of lean on.
There's one more spot, though. Like, even if Coleman and Souza, you know, make the team, there's that one more spot. And it's like, well, who gets that spot? Is it a Whitley? Is it a Belak? Is it a name that we haven't really
heard Martinez.
Of yet? Seth Martinez, he'd be in the mix there, too. So, like, it's going to come down. That's it. That's what it's going to come down to.
Yeah, look, but I think that because of the expectations of this team, that you're not trying to find a spot for a Forrest Whitley. I think you're right. I think he will at some point make an appearance on the roster. I just think that unless those veterans really don't look good, then I think that those veterans are going to get the first crack. That's who they'd like to see carry them in the middle of the bullpen.
Yep.
And then, like you said, based on injury, that's when they'll have to adjust.
Yeah, I think Whitley would have to outperform them pretty substantially in order to beat them for the job. I'm with you on that. 713-780-ESPN. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Lamont, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's going on, Lamont?
It's for both of you guys, but I know that Pac-Man Joe, I have a question for you, man. When it comes to pitchers, and you're going to sound like this is the dumbest thing that you ever heard. When I'm looking at the game, and they are throwing pitches, and the announcer quickly says what kind of pitch it is, how do they even know that? Is it because of their arsenal of what they know they pitch? Is it because of the grip of the ball, or is it because of how it goes across the – goes across the plate. And that's all I have, fellas. Like I said, I know it's very mundane and stupid, but I just really want to know that.
No, look, and Jeremy still calls baseball. He can get in on this too. I think the biggest thing is just the velocity of the pitch, and you can see the movement of the pitch to figure out what the pitch is, because you're not going to see the grip on a pitch by pitch basis. It's going to be the velocity and location, and then the movement that all and most of these guys are ex major leaguers, or you've been calling games forever to where you pretty much know real quickly how quick based on how those three factors factor in what the pitch was.
Yeah, I didn't catch exactly what he asked.
So if you're calling a game at U of H, how do you quickly figure out what pitch it was from a breaking pitch, pitch, slider, splitter?
It's really one, you do your homework on it, so you know his repertoire. Like, if he's got a fastball, changeup, curveball mix, there's your idea. And then if you have a radar gun, it's really easy. Like if you have the velo reading, and it's like, okay, that's 93, that's a fastball, and then you see 82, that's his off speed, and then what the movement does. But if you don't have a gun, usually a hard straight pitch is fastball. If you see some sort of bend to it, then there's your breaking ball. And then if it's a righty and it kind of goes into a right-handed hitter and it's slower, that's more than likely your changeup. So that's what you're looking for. So, you're looking for velocity, and if whatever he's throwing the hardest is his fastball. Now, if you see a lot of run to it, okay, there maybe it's probably a two-seamer or it's a cutter.
I was going to say velocity, movement, location, and like you said, and homework. Like,
yeah,
and
location
knowing.
To me doesn't matter as much.
Repertoire. So yeah so velocity, movement, location, and repertoire to me.
Yeah, and you can see a little bend to it. Like if you see a pitcher throw three 93 mile per hour fastballs, and let's say you don't have a gun, but you see three fastballs, boom, 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 you can tell it's the heat. And then you see a little bend and break. That's probably a curveball. That's a slide piece.
Yep.
Then you see the same straight pitch, but now it's moving into a righty. Okay, that's a change. Now you can get some nuanced stuff like sink. That's tough to tell from a booth. Like you probably need to know his repertoire if you have a sinker. If it's a two-seam, four-seam mix, you can usually tell because a two-seam is going to ride into a righty if it's a right-handed pitcher. So there's little tricks to the trade. But like you said, it's about seeing it a lot.
Yep.
It's seeing it a lot, and then you kind of just put patterns together.
And what was this? What was the term that everybody thought was this new innovative term last year on the off-speed pitch?
Oh, yeah.
Sweeper. They brought that into the mix because
that's a slider.
All it is a really slow breaking pitch.
Yeah, it's a slow slider to me. Like, I don't like the new sweeper thing.
And now, it's not 12-6, it's more east to west.
Yeah. And I will say this about the just like pitch movement and stuff when you're using it from a scouting perspective. The Astros were cutting edge with that. They use TrackMan, which TrackMan shows you velo. It shows you the degree of what the pitch is doing. It shows you the rise. It shows you the elevation. It shows you the spin and like the – what is it? I can't remember the terms that they use, but maybe RPM.
Yeah, it's revolutions per minute.
Yeah, RPMs. And then they show you like how many spins they get per minute. And the Astros were cutting edge, the first – to use that in Major League Baseball. And there's a lot of people that think that's the reason they found your Frombers, your Javiers, and they had so much success with pitcher and development.
Oh, because remember now, they took Morton and Cole to different levels when they got them and they acquired them. And Verlander talked about it when he came back here, the fact that the Mets weren't doing anything close to what the Astros do in terms of the deep dives, the analytics, and utilizing all the information to make sure that they're better pitchers, and that's huge.
Mm-hmm. So today's the first full squad for the Astros. Everybody's there. Last week was pitchers and catchers. Today was the first full squad. Cool, because you get to see Astros hitters facing Astro pitchers. All these media guys are out there recording it and posting it on Twitter. So I put together the all-time Astros 26-man roster for the fun and because it's full squad day.
Okay.
This is all-time, and this is like how I would construct a roster, too. Like, I on my bench, I need somebody who's capable of playing shortstop because you need somebody who's capable of playing shortstop on your bench. I did struggle with the arms because there's a lot more great Astro starters than there are relievers. Now, there are a couple of relievers that are really good. You want me to start with the pitchers? You want me to start with the offensive players?
I like the lineup. I'm curious.
I didn't do a lineup, but I did by position.
I mean, you know what I mean. Yeah. I'll go with the position players.
All right. First. So the Astros, I went 13 position players, 13 pitchers, because I think that's what most teams do. I had to put Craig Biggio as my catcher. The Astros are loaded at second base. I know Biggio only played catcher for 3 years, but if you want Craig Biggio in your lineup, he's going to have to play catcher. So Craig Biggio is my catcher. Sorry about it. Jeff Bagwell is my first baseman. Killer Bees, what's up? Jose Altuve, the greatest Astro of all, is my second baseman. Alex Bregman at third. Carlos Correa at short. Give me Lance Berkman in left. Cesar Cedeno in center. Jimmy Wins at right. Yordan Alvarez, my DH. And then my four-man bench, I need a backup catcher. I really wanted to put Yiner Diaz here, but I went with Brad Ausmus. Joe Morgan, backup infielder. Dickie Thon, a backup infielder. He's my guy that's capable of playing shortstop. And then Jose Cruz is my final bench spot, final outfielder.
J. Cruz.
I think my biggest problem is...
J.O. as your backup outfielder is pretty strong.
Is center field. I think I would have had Springer in center field.
Cesar Cedeno?
Yeah. I mean, look, sure, Cesar's career is obviously longer here in Houston, but Springer's high here, especially being World Series MVP. I would take that.
What was Cesar's average?
His career batting average was 285.
Because 285 steals a boatload of bases.
Over his career was 285. He finished with a 790 OPS. George Springer, all-time, 267 average, 835 OPS.
Yeah, I'd lean Cedeno as well. And love Springer. He's my favorite Astro.
But, I mean, obviously you have to go only what he did with the Astros. You can't look at career. But you look at Cedeno. Cedeno was a four-time All-Star and finished top 16 in MVP voting four times. George Springer was a four-time All-Star and finished top 16 MVP voting twice. Actually, three-time All-Star in Houston. He made one with the Blue Jays. Three-time All-Star Houston, top 16 MVP voting three times. So Cedeno has volume over George
He was
Springer.
Healthy enough to make an All-Star team with Toronto?
Yeah, he made it in 20. He had a really good year in 22.
His first year there?
No, that was his second year. Okay. He played 133 games, so like didn't even finish the whole year, and had like an 814 OPS. He was, I shouldn't say really good. That's good. It's not really, really good. So Cedeno, yeah, I give Cedeno the nod there.
Well, I'll tell you what.
That's a good argument,
with
though,
Joe
with the
Joe Morgan and
that's a great bench. Pretty darn good.
Joe
great
Morgan bench. On the bench is a pretty yeah. nice.
I think the Astros have the best collection of second basemen in the history of the game. They go Biggio, Altuve, Joe Morgan.
Who rivals that? What?
Cano I don't think anybody does.
Cano and Willie Randolph in their
no,
good
Cano's
years.
No, Cano's a cheater.
I know, but I'm just saying, in his good years with the Yankees, whether we know if he cheated or not, the Yankees?
I don't know. Like, I
Dodgers
I don't know
had
Davey
Lopes
it.
And Sachs had some good years.
I love the Astros second
base. Yeah,
that's why Biggio
good.
Has to catch.
Yeah.
And then my pitching staff, 13-man pitching staff, and it's up to my manager to figure out their roles because I don't want this job because you're going to have a lot of dudes that are fighting for starts that aren't going to be happy. So I just went alphabetical order here. Roger Clemens, yeah, short term, but he gave you some
Cy
really
Young
good
here.
Stuff.
That's fair.
Cy Young. Gerrit Cole, I know super short term, but his 2019 was like top two, top three Astro seasons for a pitcher in the
you.
History. Larry Durker. Larry Durker's more volume. Yeah. Randy Johnson. Sorry.
I, was ask if
I
the
know
unit
he was only
was
here
on
for
that.
A few
yep.
months, but Randy Johnson in those few months was nasty.
Ooh,
and if I'm using that few months as like my left-handed specialist out of the bullpen, good luck hitting that guy. He doesn't have the volume. Does not have the resume. But that little brief 3 months with the Stros, good luck hitting that guy. And I want that guy on my team. Joe Niekro, he's going to be on here. He's got some really good volume. He can eat up some innings. Roy Oswalt, who has the highest WAR for any pitcher in Astro history. J.R. Richard, who didn't last a long time, but was really dominant during that short time. Nolan Ryan's on the list. Mike Scott is there. Give me Dave Smith to have a real reliever, old school Dave
yep.
Smith. Justin Verlander, who is the greatest Astro starting pitcher of all time. Billy Wagner, who's the best closer in Astro history. And then Don Wilson rounds out my pitching staff.
That's a pretty stout pitching staff when you think about some of the arms that and where they sit all time and Hall of Fame and everything else. When because I was like, I know you're doing alphabetical order. I was like, well, Nolan's got to be on that list.
You know why I did? You know why I went alphabetical?
Then you
because I had about 10 starters, and I didn't want to make a rotation.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say, because you had to pick and choose, and then if I told you, hey, who's starting opening day?
I know. I'm going to let Dusty Baker decide that. Recency bias with my manager, and I want Poppy's
belly to make
the
decision. Bigger question, if Dusty's making that decision, how many of these guys does Maldi catch?
Yeah, exactly. And how many guys is he giving days off to when they don't need one?
Maldi, that's the reason Maldi didn't make it as my backup catcher, because I didn't want Dusty to be one of the one making the decisions and start him for all these guys. He's going to go with Maldi over Craig Biggio.
No, Tony Eusebio?
I love Eusebio. love Eusebio.
He was the first guy to do like the laid-back splits catching?
Yeah, he was – I loved his. His swing was so weird, like inside-out swing.
Quirky,
remember he had like that 30-game hitting streak over the course
he
of
did.
Like 90 games?
Yeah.
Because he was only catching every few games?
Yep.
I love Eusebio. I really wanted to put Yiner on the list, though, but I couldn't pull the trigger. I almost did, but I just couldn't pull the trigger.
I guess the one name that stands out from the pitchers left out would be Brad Lidge immediately. Obviously, everyone remembers the Pujols tank, but, I mean, Brad Lidge was a really good reliever for, you know, I don't know what, 3, 4, 5 years here for the Astros. So, Lidge – I guess it would depend on your starting pitcher, relief pitcher mix, but Lidge would seem to be kind of a guy that, you know, just missed the list.
Lidge would have probably made it if I went like just real six man rotation and then like a real bullpen, he would have probably been on there. I studied him pretty close with Dave Smith, and Dave Smith with the Astros was here for 11 years. He had 199 saves and a 2.53 ERA.
That's pretty good.
Whereas Lidge had a 3.30 ERA and 123 saves.
I gave
Smith the nod over Lidge.
Was Cammy in the mix at third?
Not really. Like I was I did pull him up, and I looked up his numbers compared to Bregman, and I even looked like Doug Rader and stuff like that. The Caminiti didn't have fantastic years in Houston.
He had the MVP year in San Diego, right?
And most of his good year, almost all of his good years were in San Diego. Guess Ken Caminiti's career high in homers with the Astros. Just single season.
I mean, the dome sapped out.
True.
Yeah. Power.
But he did come back. He did come back.
True. 21.
Actually, I don't think he played at Minute Maid, now that I think about it.
I don't think he did either.
I think he played his last year at
–
was Minute Maid
here.
2000 or 2001? But what year did Minute Maid open? Because Caminiti's
2000.
Okay, then Caminiti played 1 year at Minute Maid. His last year in Houston was 2000.
I was going to say 21 as well, Brian. I'll say maybe a little better. Well, the way Jeremy set it up, I'll say 18.
That's it.
Oh, wow.
18 in the strike-shortened year of 94.
That I'm was learning his, to read my co-host.
That was his his best OPS year was the Minute Maid year, but he only played in 59 games. And then if his only like full year was 94, 847 OPS. Like his numbers as an Astro, 264 average, 330 on base, 402 slugging, 732 OPS. Like 103 home runs. Like that's his career with Houston in 10 years. That's not that good.
Well, and the two starters that came to mind that weren't on the list were DK and Shane Reynolds.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike Reynolds was close.
Mike Hampton had a 22-win season?
Oh, he did. The one year he had a really great year, yeah.
Reynolds and Hampton were both honorable mention. Kyle, I just didn't really have the volume.
Okay.
But this is a tough list to crack, guys.
No doubt.
Reynolds was on the short list, but he didn't quite get there. But I would put this 26-man roster up against most, man. This is a good 26, especially that pitching staff. That pitching staff is nasty.
Oh, God.
There's maybe two or three teams that are touching that pitching staff. It's an amazing pitching staff.
Someone said Nikro, please. I don't know if they feel like Nikro should have been off of it or if they're begging for Nikro, but Nikro did make it. Someone said Lidge. Someone said Reynolds. Someone said Lima. Lima had one really good year.
Yeah,
and like Jose Lima doesn't belong on this list over Don Wilson.
He also could have fulfilled your Taco Tuesdays because he brought that to the mix too.
Casale.
That's right. Olé. Every day.
Someone said was Oswald on the list. Oswald, absolutely. Was on the list. Yep. So you could put him as one of the top three, four, five starters.
He was nailed.
History.
Was awesome. Oh, man. He was so good.
All right. 713-780-ESPN. Let's make mock drafts great again. How are we making the Texans better as well? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
It's time to sit back, relax, and enjoy this next bit of brilliance with Joel and Jeremy. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees.
He's blank, I'm Brandon. We are the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. So we're making mock drafts great again, and we're allowing you to participate as well because we care about you, the viewer. You are the most important people in our lives. You get to make the Texans first-round pick. Who you taking? You can follow along at Jeremy Branham. I just put up the vote for today. Last week, blankers, it went like this. We had the options of Nate Wiggins, Graham Barton, who nobody in Houston likes. Poor guy. Cooper DeJean, the corner from Iowa, and then Chop Robinson, defensive end from Penn State. I can't remember which way we voted. I have a terrible short-term memory. But Chop Robinson took the viewer vote. He went 40%, Nate Wiggins 26%, Cooper DeJean 25%. Graham Barton did go up to 9%, so he's stealing some votes. But Chop Robinson won the vote there. Today's mock draft that we're looking at, CBS, it's from Kyle Stackpole, which, what a name, Kyle Stackpole. He goes with Caleb Williams at number one. Brian, you don't like the Bears, do you?
No, I'm not a Bears fan.
We're not going to be able to bounce off the Bears things anymore with a non-killer.
I can make up a Bears take if
that's
you want.
Okay. We spend too much time talking about the Bears, if we're being completely honest. Way too much Bears
talk. By the way,
talk.
Did Joe ever pay off on his bets for you guys for
no.
the Bears winning the division?
No.
Actually.
And there was not a clause that if he got fired that he didn't have to pay the bet either.
That's right.
Yeah. So he didn't get fired from the station. And just so everybody knows, he's still working with the station, just no longer with the Killer Bees. Because he's not a B, and he called me talentless. So the Bears at number one, Caleb Williams.
They go, let that go.
Honestly, he is kind of a B.
He is a B.
Are we sure he's
not a B? I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I see what you did there.
We did call him the Queen Bee of the show. So. Jaden Daniels goes number two to Washington, which would lose me $100. Drake May goes number three to New England. Marvin Harrison Jr. four to Arizona. So kind of the status quo there. We've seen Daniels and May interchangeable at two and three. Harrison at four has been a popular pick. Number five, Alumuwa Fashuna, say it with conviction. He's the offensive tackle for Penn State. Malik Nabers is going number six, LSU receiver. Joe Control, alt delete, is going number seven to Tennessee, the tackle from Notre Dame. Latu. The edge from Atlanta, or the edge from UCLA going to Atlanta. Dallas Turner, edge from Bama going to Chicago. And then Talese Fuaga, offensive tackle from Oregon State going to the Jets. Scroll down. Houston Texans are on the clock. Stackpole has the Houston Texans taking Enos Rakestraw Jr. from Missouri if this is the pick blankers on draft day, are you okay with Rake Straw coming to the Texans?
Yeah, I am, because as we've discussed previously, look, they want to upgrade the defense, and you've got the tough decisions on some veteran defenders that you're going to have to make a call on before you get to the draft. So this tells me that they, again, are looking for a long-term fit to play on the other side of Stingley that isn't going to cost you what Stevie Nelson cost you, and maybe because they're spending money on John Gernard or a defensive lineman or two, that they're going to choose to go this route. And so, therefore, I'd be just fine with it because the names are interchangeable. The position is the most important thing here. And if you're drafting corner, that means you're not re-signing Stevie Nelson at a corner in my mind. And so I'm fine with it.
Yeah, me too. There's a lot of positions that I'm okay with, and this is one of them. If Caserio and D'Amico come together and they say Rake Straw is the corner, we want opposite of Stingley, I'm cool with that. I'm on board with it. I would be a little confused if they re-signed Nelson and then drafted Rake Straw. That would confuse me, but I would be on board with this. Brian, Enos Rake Straw Jr. is the pick at 23 on draft night. You comfortable with it?
Yeah, I wouldn't hate that because I'm not re-signing Stevie Nelson in free agency. Same. I'm not really comfortable investing the money that it would take to retain him since he's already in his 30s at this point. And obviously, if that is the case and Stevie Nelson walks, you have to add a corner. It's probably not my first choice with what I would do, but if Nick Caserio and D'Amico decide this is the guy, I trust their opinion and I'd be happy with it.
Same. Are you guys okay if we don't include quarterback when they're the next three picks?
Like, yeah, this one has that. Yeah, that's
okay,
fine.
Good. Let's skip over him because I think it makes for better conversation. So we look at the Texans pick and then the next three, and then we select who we would select on draft day. Michael Penix would be the 26th pick. We're not going to include a quarterback because the Texans have Stroud. So we got our choice of Enos Rake Straw Jr., Jordan Morgan, the tackle from Arizona, goes number 24. Cooper DeJean is the corner that goes from Iowa that goes number 25. And then since we're skipping quarterback, this brings into the equation Byron Murphy, the second defensive lineman from Texas, defensive tackle, notably. So you got your choice between those four: Rake Straw, Morgan, DeJean, and Murphy. Who are you picking?
Boy, does this make it interesting!
A good one. I know, that's why
really
I wanted to
is.
Do it.
Yeah, it's a great call because I'm leaning with what they need and what we know they're dealing with free agency wise. That's why I said corner. But when you throw that monkey wrench with Byron Murphy the second in there, holy cow. To me, then I go back to what I always revert back to, which is I listen to when D'Amico speaks at the end of the year, and he wants to upgrade the defensive line, and he wants to make the defensive line better. One that had an impact on how I saw Sheldon Rankins versus how I think he sees him, and more importantly, I think that's how they move forward in a different direction. That means Byron Murphy, to me, is the pick, because Byron Murphy definitely can be a beast and an anchor in the middle of your defensive line, and I would love to see him land with the Texans.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with Joel here. This is, look, it obviously depends on if someone slips and you get someone available at 23 that you don't expect to be there, but if it goes how most people project, and Byron Murphy is there, it's a race to the podium for me.
Yes.
There's really no second thought. Like Joel said, D'Amico told you exactly what this team needs, and we saw it on the field in Baltimore against the Ravens. They need more help up front. They've got guys that are one-year contracts that aren't going to be back, and I think Byron Murphy is a special talent that deserves to be here in the first round, so Byron Murphy would be my pick.
A lot of people say that I'm a contrarian, that I go against the grain
no.
for the sake of going against the grain.
Stop it.
I don't know why they say it. I don't believe it. I don't see it either. I'm glad you guys see it the way that I see it. Yeah, give me Byron Murphy. Give me Byron Murphy, the defensive tackle. Even if you have both needs, like you don't bring back Sheldon Rankins, you don't bring back Steven Nelson, I think there's a lot better chance of drafting a starting caliber corner with your second round pick than a guy who I think can be a pretty big factor on the defensive line. So make it unanimous with the B's. Good feng shui with the B behind the glass.
What a refreshing
Byron
change.
Murphy. Yeah, Byron Murphy's the selection of the Killer Bees. Who would you select? You can go to @JeremyBranham, and you can play along and put up a poll there. The early report back, 75 votes, they would take Byron Murphy. 49% is the early returns. Cooper DeJean is the second most popular pick.
But with DeJean, you just don't know if he's going to play corner for the majority of his career, so that would concern me.
Same. Like, I would probably go Rake Straw ahead of DeJean. DeJean I would take ahead of the tackle.
Yep.
And surprisingly, the tackle leads the vote over Rake Straw.
Huh.
How is that possible? Titus Howard put on his Twitter bio today that he's a right tackle only.
I was just going to mention that to you. Like, that is the biggest, most interesting factor we haven't discussed yet, which is at least Titus Howard is telling us where he wants to play next year.
Is that kind of being a diva?
Oh, for sure.
Like, we agree, for the record, so it's probably like we're not going to get upset about it. Like,
right.
If we thought Titus Howard was a better left guard and we wanted him to play left guard and he put on his Twitter bio that he's a right tackle only, we would be losing our minds over this.
Yep.
But because we agree with him, like, no one really cares. I'm speaking more we generally than, like, we, you, and I. But it's still diva behavior.
Oh, no, there's no doubt about it. And the fact is that we know he's already paid like a right tackle, and we want him to play right tackle. But that should be for the team to figure out what position he's going to play, because they're the ones signing the checks that gave him what he wanted. And just, you know, let them make the decision, and maybe you could voice that behind the scenes if you wish. But to put it out there like that, there's no doubt there's some diva in that.
Yeah, I didn't I read that as a little diva-ish too, and I don't like it. But because I agree, I'm willing to let it slide. And because we have beef, I don't want any more beef with Titus Howard. He's a little bigger than me.
You create some beef sometimes.
Hey, he slid into my comments. I didn't add him.
Ooh, that sounded dirty, but okay.
713-780-3776. Who you taking there? Mailbag Monday. You can ask the Killer Bees whatever you want to ask. 713-780-ESPN. What's the question that you have for the Bees that you've always wanted to know? Well, ask it now. Now's your chance. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You've got mail.
It's Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
Something's in the bag.
Mommy? Mommy?
What's in the bag?
What's in the box?
He's Blaine Gombrano. It's time now for our Mailbag Monday. What is your question for the Killer Bees? 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRP listener line. Pena has a question for the Killer Bees. What you got, Pena?
How are we going on, guys? So I got a good one for y'all this week. Start bench cut. Randy Moss, Jerry Rice, Calvin Johnson, College Prime. Who y'all got? Thank you.
College
Have a great day.
Prime?
College Prime?
He said Moss, Jerry Rice, and Calvin Johnson.
I would almost say it would be even better if it was NFL Prime.
Let's do both. We'll start in college.
Wow. College Prime? So you're going Marshall? You're going Rice went to Southwest Missouri?
Was it at Mississippi Valley?
Yeah. Or Mississippi Valley State. There you go. Yep. Mississippi Valley. And Calvin Johnson went to Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech, yeah.
Where they ran the triple option.
Yeah,
I think I'd have to start Randy Moss.
Randy Moss
got himself on the Heisman stage in a year where Peyton Manning and Charles Woodson were there.
And he was the Heisman finals. Yeah,
he probably had the best quarterback too.
Yeah, was it Chad Pennington?
Yeah, it was at least for a little bit.
Boy, certainly better than Calvin Johnson.
And in high school, he had another great quarterback that could really dish it out.
Allen Iverson?
Nope, Jason Williams.
White
chocolate was his high school quarterback.
Halliburton tried the white chocolate behind the back elbow pass.
He did. It bounced.
Yeah, it was a good effort.
Yeah.
It wasn't perfect, but it was pretty good. I mean, he got there.
So college, I'm going to go Moss is my start.
Moss only played 1 year. I didn't realize they only played 1 year.
But he was up for the Heisman.
So no, he was great.
And if we're saying prime, then I'm going to go Moss. I'm going to go Rice, and I'm going to go Calvin Johnson. Because Calvin Johnson? Yeah, the offense wasn't ideal for Calvin Johnson.
You're still good, though. I'll go Randy. I'll start Moss. I'm going to bench Calvin and cut Jerry Rice. Because no one knows where Mississippi Valley – well, I guess you know where it's at.
I think we know it's in Mississippi.
I think I know what
it's
state
in the Valley
starting
of Mississippi.
With.
I guess you do know where it's at.
Yeah.
Rice finished ninth in the Heisman voting in 84. Huh. I didn't even know it. I didn't realize
that. I'm sure
they
were slinging it.
Calvin Johnson wasn't All-American. I'm going to go controversial. Yeah, give me Moss as my starter. I'm going to keep Calvin, and I'm going to cut Jerry Rice because he didn't play – in real football.
So your Yahoo Sports headline would have been, Branham wanted to cut Jerry Rice.
Georgia Tech was pretty good.
They weren't playing real football. You started with saying they were playing the triple option.
Yeah, but they were good. Like, they won a bunch of games.
What was their peak, like nine?
Actually, it was pre Johnson. This was Chan Gailey. So maybe they weren't running
the triple
option.
I was just going to say Chan Gailey was there, yep.
So maybe they weren't doing triple option stuff yet. So that's what I'm sticking with.
NFL version of this question is completely
NFL.
Different. NFL to me is Jerry Rice, it's Randy Moss, and then it's Calvin Johnson.
Yeah,
that's
mine too. You
defer
it all,
three.
Brian?
Yeah, make it three.
I know Randy Moss wants to change that narrative and refers to himself as the greatest. I love your self-confidence, Randy, but Jerry's the greatest of all time.
Yeah, he's got him on the volume. Like, Randy Moss at his absolute best.
I think you could argue Randy Moss is the most talented wide receiver of all time.
The combination
but
of
if
speed,
you're just
size,
talking resume,
point,
like,
that, but yeah.
Their pro, you know, their pro football reference page is Jerry Rice.
And then when you look at Super Bowls and all-time statistics, it's tough not to say Jerry Rice.
Yeah, King of Twitch, what's the most unpredictable division in the AL and the NL this year?
Central's in both?
Unpredictable?
Yeah, I'll go AL Central.
Yeah, Central,
for sure.
I think it's
sure.
Central's in both.
Let me think about the NL for a second. I think the AL Central is completely up for grabs.
Well, because nationally, the East feels fairly predictable with the Braves,
yeah,
and then the Dodgers in the West.
That's a good call. I'm gonna go with Brian.
I think it's Central's in both.
Because you don't know what the Cardinals are going to do.
No.
And you don't know. The White Sox are probably still going to be hot
garbage.
What
are the Cubs this year? We don't
know. The Cubs are up in the air.
I bet the Reds to win that division.
Oh, the Reds are really good.
They got a lot of talented young hitters, for sure.
Milwaukee doesn't want to pay anybody, so they're not.
Well, they just brought back Brandon Woodruff.
But he won't pitch this year.
Yeah, but he's not going to pitch this year.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, so I like the Reds in that division a lot.
Oh, I do too. Yeah,
like,
they're fun
I'm
to watch.
On the talent there.
They're really getting arms back.
They're getting arms back. They're getting. I can't remember the other guy's name, but Lodolo is coming back.
Nick Lodolo, yeah.
And then who's the other? They missed him.
Yeah, there's another young pitcher. I'll find his name in two
seconds. I've been drafting him, but I can't. Hunter Green.
Yeah, Hunter. That's
Hunter
not even
Green's
who
really
I was.
Good.
Oh, I was thinking of Graham Ashcraft.
Yeah, he's coming back too.
He's coming back too.
Didn't they sign a couple of veterans? Not really. They brought in Frankie Montas, but that's not really a good
That's
move
just
to the
a
needle.
Cheap. See what he's got.
Yeah, maybe he has a chance to be their number five. But their offense is legit. And if Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo are just okay to good, I like their chances to win that division. So we all went Central there. 713-780-3776. 0613, back with another food question. What are y'all's go-to comfort sandwiches?
Well, comfort sandwich to me is easy. I mean, that's a cheeseburger loaded. If I want to go, okay, how about this?
Are we counting those as a sandwich?
Yeah, are we counting burgers as sandwiches?
It is a sandwich.
I know it's a sandwich, but like.
Well, you just said it.
We argued this a couple months ago.
Yes, we did.
And we came to the conclusion that a cheeseburger was indeed a sandwich.
I mean, it is a sandwich, but if you wanted to say burger, he would say burger.
Now you're getting nitpicky.
Maybe so.
I think
we
it's
just
fair,
got
though.
Rid of Joe. I don't want. Don't go bush league on me this early, because you. I already
okay,
know
well,
how you play.
What
who
is
said
your,
it.
What is your burger like? What is your go-to comfort burger?
Burger for me is a double cheeseburger with American cheese, with grilled mushrooms, grilled onions, and ketchup.
I'm not surprised it has ketchup on.
And I'm good. I'm great.
Yeah, for me, I think I would also go cheeseburger for allowing that in. It'd frankly be downstairs from where we are right now. It'd be Burger Chan downstairs. Get their burger with cheese and bacon and the crispy fried onion strings. Fantastic.
Oh, I forgot the bacon.
You doing sales for them?
I would like to. If Burger Chan wants to reach out, yeah. I would be more than happy to.
Forgive me for omitting bacon. I'm putting bacon on that bad boy, too.
There you go.
Yeah, I'm a hot take right here. I don't think that bacon belongs on a cheeseburger.
Oh,
what?
Oh, man.
You get a cheeseburger for the flavors of a cheeseburger. You don't get a cheeseburger for the flavors of the bacon. And the moment you put the bacon on the cheeseburger, the bacon becomes the dominant flavor.
Well,
if you wanted a cheeseburger, get the cheeseburger.
What's wrong with bacon being the dominant flavor? They complement each other.
I don't think it enhances. I think the bacon takes away from the cheeseburger.
Oh, I don't at all.
I'm a foodie. I have great food taste. You know all these foodies just self-proclaim that they're foodies. Whoever gives them the title of foodies.
Like Lance Erlein?
Yeah, they just tell, I'm a foodie, and then now we have to believe you're a foodie? Where did you get that from? Anybody can claim it. Just like you can claim being the preeminent draft expert.
So you're not putting bacon on a club sandwich either?
That's a little different. Bacon belongs in a club sandwich. It doesn't belong on a cheeseburger.
But it's still going to steal everything, every other meat you put on the sandwich.
Yeah, but I don't care if it steals the meat of ham and turkey. Like, if I want a cheeseburger, it's because I want a cheeseburger. I like the cheese and I like the burger.
I'm
Give me a
the
cheeseburger.
Blend. Everything, the cheese enhances the bacon, which enhances the burger. And then
the dominant
the
flavor. I want the cheeseburger to be my dominant flavor. Mm-hmm. I don't want the bacon to be the dominant flavor. If I wanted bacon to be the dominant flavor, I'd have some bacon and eggs.
Tell your taste buds to reevaluate the dominant.
You guys like egg on a burger?
Yes,
I do not.
I'm with Jeremy. I love an egg. Good for
I
good.
Do not.
So good.
With the runny yolk?
Well, see,
I don't get it very runny. I like it cooked.
I honestly like it over well. But
yeah,
if it gets runny, that's okay.
I don't mind a little bit of runs, but I don't want it to be a sloppy mess.
I hate yolks, so nope, I'm out.
That's funny because you're yoked. Ocho, do your family members have nicknames for you?
No.
No.
My grandma used to, well, she still, I don't know if she really calls me anymore.
My mom.
Sometimes she'll call me mijo or head of mias. Whenever I was really young, they would call me pupas.
My mom used to call me the prince.
The prince?
Because she's the queen, my dad was the king, so.
That's what Joe used to call you.
No. No.
Triple zero. Do you any for you, Brian? I mean, BMAC.
No.
Your parents?
No.
You don't like BMAC as much as we found out.
No, I don't hate it. I just don't prefer it. But no one.
So that's
no,
why it's in your handle.
That's another story we don't have time for. But no, I don't really have any nicknames for family members.
What do you think about instead of Josh Hader, the Astros could have gotten J.D. Martinez and then used the rest of the money that was spent on Hader for another reliever?
Where's so Martinez play, though?
At this point, DH. Jeremy and I already discussed this. He's a DH. So yeah, I'll take Hader.
Yeah, sure. I would rather have Hader because I don't know how you fit Martinez in because you don't want Yordan playing left every day.
I want him playing 51 times this year, Brian. We have a little wager here.
I think you have a shot. I think it's a really good number.
Well, especially with a spot as quote, I had new hope.
Yeah, I know. I probably wouldn't have said 50 after a spot as quote. Corey, is Big 12 basketball the strongest conference in all of sports?
In all of sports,
that's
in all
maybe
of basketball, yes. In all of sports, I would say SEC football.
I would say Big 12 wrestling. Or Big 10. What's Nebraska in? They're probably in the Big 10. I have no idea.
Nebraska's in the Big Ten.
I don't think the SEC football was as dominant this year.
It's SEC football every year.
I mean, which one of the SEC schools played the championship game?
Okay. I think Georgia still had an argument.
I mean, how can you be the strongest conference in all college sports?
Well, if you're looking at the teams they'll have for next year, two of the four are SEC schools.
I'll go Big 12 basketball because I'm a raging homer.
Well, we know this.
Aggie Matt, why is Joe really gone? He called me talentless. Joe's not gone from the station.
No.
Joe's just no longer.
He's
with
just
the
relegated to.
Joe's got stuff
unknown.
To do. So
European
he basically
soccer.
Tried to abandon us because he always is trying to get by.
No. It wasn't Joe that made the decision. Let's not get that twisted. Eric the driver, who in the bullpen has the best single pitch?
In the Astros bullpen?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's what he meant.
Wow.
I think I'll go with Abreu's fastball.
I was going to go Abreu's fastball?
I think I'd go with Abreu's fastball.
Because to me,
it was slide piece.
Whose fastball is better between Hader and Abreu?
That's the thing. I need to see Hader.
Yeah.
Up close and personal for a while.
Wow. That's a good question.
My gut feel is my gut feeling is Abreu's fastball.
That's where I would
go. Ocho, which college basketball team has been most disappointing and why? Michigan or Memphis?
Well, I watched Memphis play the majority of that game the other day, and I was like, against SMU?
Yesterday, it was yesterday.
Yeah,
got
and I'm like, my goodness, Memphis has just underachieved.
Can I go option C, the Texas Longhorns?
Yeah, I mean, they're a tournament team right now.
Yeah.
Still pretty disappointing coming off of what?
That's just because they played
League
U of
eight.
H close
I mean,
on the
Elite
road
eight
and
last
they got
year,
their doors
I mean,
blown
yeah.
up.
Yeah.
Is mayonnaise an instrument?
Is it an instrument?
What?
That's what it says. It's mayonnaise an instrument. You take it however you choose.
I'll take it as I'll pass because that sounds weird.
I don't like mayonnaise, but it's necessary in some things. Like I made a copycat Chewy's jalapeno ranch the other day, and it called for mayo, and it tasted good. So I think mayo's necessary for things. I don't eat it on stuff though.
I've never been a fan of mayo.
Yeah. Yeah, me either. All right, that does it for our mailbag
Monday.
Do you like tuna?
I mean, and growing up in the Midwest, we had a lot of tuna fish, and it was also very inexpensive. And tuna, you had to mix it with something, but we would mix it with Miracle Whip.
Where are you fishing for tuna in the Midwest? Is it in the lakes?
Tuna's popular.
From mile five?
I'm kidding. I know it's not in the lakes. Well, chicken of the sea.
Thanks, Jessica.
I'm not a big tuna guy. I don't like tuna at all. Ugh, makes me sick thinking about it. 713-780-ESPN. Can we be done with the NBA All-Star game already? I have a solution, actually, that I want to run by you guys to see if it would fix the All-Star game. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Guys, right now I want to tell you about the newest, greatest golf spot I have found, and they have the best simulators around, and it is X-Golf. X-Golf is absolutely fantastic. It's at 99 and I-10, and there's 8 simulators. It's a great spot to be. You can think about it as kind of like better than Top Golf indoors, and it's the most accurate golf that you can find. If there's a rainy day and you're supposed to play your course and you couldn't get on, well, I got a solution for you. You go to X-Golf because X-Golf is going to be as accurate as it comes. You can actually play your own golf ball. The golf ball that you like to play for touch and feel, you can practice your chipping, your putting, hit all your shots. it is so accurate in calculating spin and ball flight and distance. And you can practice as well as you can play up to 50 courses worldwide. We're going to be there on Friday. It would be a great time for you to check it out and know that it could be your go-to indoor golf spot and practice range, because it is absolutely the best I've ever seen. Check it out today. You need to go to X Golf on the internet or go out there in person. Matter of fact, see us on Friday as the station's going to be broadcasting live from 12 until 6. You need to stop by and see us. It's 99 at I-10 and Katy. It's X Golf.
All teams covered. No stalking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
I don't know what to call that NBA All-Star game yesterday. He's blankers on Branham.
Scrimmage.
Yeah, that's a good way to call it. It was like a layup drill. That's what it was.
Yeah, it was a half-assed layup drill.
Yeah, Larry Bird was begging for them to play hard before the game. Kobe said once that there has been better pickup games at Poly Pavilion at UCLA. Anthony Edwards said after the game, like, what do you expect from us? This is a break. 211-186. Like, this was more of a NASCAR race.
It was awful.
Than a basketball game.
I don't know. I mean, we had it on, and I was going in and out of the living room, and I happened to catch Luka getting a completely, I don't know how he could have been winded, but he got a dunk. He barely got over the rim, and then there was a steal in the backcourt. They gave it back to him, and he tried the off the backboard to himself and got it stuck on the front of the rim and then didn't get back. I'm like, oh, this is just awful.
I watched about 3 minutes of game action, and I turned it off, and I watched the Houston-Iowa State game from January 9th. That I was like, I turned it on, and I was like, okay, this is not basketball. I'm going to turn on a real basketball game. So I went back and watched the old Houston-Iowa State game. Not a fan. I wasn't
the whole
fan
thing
of
was organized. It was actually so poorly organized that TNT did the one thing that could have saved it. They took Charles off the air on the main feed and put him on an alternate feed with Draymond Green and Taylor Rooks. And then the rest of the studio show was just completely bland. And then, again, trying to watch this, it was like everybody, me, you either wanted the MVP, so you were trying to really impress. And I thought Halliburton, first time in the game, and he made five threes in a span of like a minute and a half. And then Damon Lillard started making them from half court, and I'm going, this is a joke.
Yeah. I do like that the East-West is back. Like, that's fine with me. There's ways that I think you can – yeah, I think there's ways you can fix this. You had Lillard shooting at half court, but at least he was making. Like,
Luka tried the
60-footer. Like, he tried a 60-65-footer. Like, what was he doing? Like, what is that? Like, what's going on?
Anthony Towns had 30 points in the fourth quarter.
No one's turning in to see that.
And the problem is, and we have the audio from Anthony Edwards if you want to play it, but it doesn't really matter. Like, it seems like the NBA All-Star game is flipped between formats, and, you know, you have the captain thing. They messed with how long the game was. They've done a ton of different things to try to make the game competitive, but it doesn't matter unless the players in the game take it seriously. Like, guys, I mean, you mentioned Kobe earlier. There was a time, even though the scores were still 150, 148, that when it got to the fourth quarter, the Jordans and the Magics, the Kobes, they would start to take it serious and play some real ball in the fourth quarter.
But Kobe took it seriously because he wanted to prove himself against Jordan. He always wanted to guard him, and that was cool. But, you know, Adam Silver said he wanted to get back to East-West and regular format because he didn't think the old format was working. At least with four quarters where it didn't get completely whacked out like 20-some point leads, you knew that you were playing for something for every quarter, and there was some money involved because at the end of the day, which sucks, but this is where we're at, players are not going to play hard unless there's money on the line. And that's why the midseason tournament was so popular, because guys got a chance to get $500,000 if they won. So there was a little bit more intensity. When they were doing the four-quarter thing, and you win the quarters and it was going to charity, it also meant something at the end of the day because the team got more money if you won than if you lost. And it condensed everything to be to kind of create some kind of competitiveness with the score in each quarter. Yesterday was a joke.
There's still money involved, but it's not enough, and that's how I would fix it. Because winning team gets $100,000, the losing team gets $25,000. You get fined $75,000 for saying something bad to the referees. Like, it's $75,000, so obviously still a significant amount of money, but it's not a lot to guys who are all stars in the NBA and they're making probably on average $25 million a year. I think they should raise it, and I think they should give the winning team, every member of the winning team, $1 million. The losing team gets nothing. You get your trip paid for. They'll book your travel, your hotel room. They'll feed you. But the winning team gets $1 million. The losing team gets $0, and I think you'll see them compete a little bit.
I don't like how high you just put it at.
Even with the $1 million, I mean, a guy like LeBron that's going to make like $50 million a year.
Still a million,
it's
though.
Still chunk
you win
change,
a cool
damn.
Meal and one night of work. I think that they try. They tried in the NIT when there was $1 million up top.
I don't think that they're going to pay more for the All-Star game to guys that are multi-millionaires already than they are for the midseason tournament for the roster that wins it getting $500,000. But if you want to say that the winning team, winner take all, $500,000 for the winning team. Yeah, I think that would be exactly where you start, because I think when you're talking about that kind of money and the sponsorships and everything that would have to roll into the NBA coming up with that dough as well as the midseason tournament, I think that's too much. But I think if you want to go $500,000 winner take all, that's basically essentially what they're kicking out anyway, or at least close to where I think they would. That would be something that might have a chance. Because otherwise, everybody say, "Well, how do you resurrect it?" You just don't. If you don't have the money aspect of it, then you're not going to entice these guys to play.
I like the $1 million. $500,000 just doesn't sound as cool. Like, tune into the NBA All-Stars that are playing for $1 million, or tune into the NBA All-Star game where the winner gets $500,000. Give me the full million.
How many guys are on the roster?
Give me the full million. Somebody says everything should go to charity. That's fine. Play for $1 million, do your charity, and the players get the tax write-offs.
Because I would say that you could just take the grand total of how much money the winning team gets and just say, winner take all, $37 million or whatever.
It's also not my – that's a good call. You could do that. Because now you're getting a bigger lump sum, and it gives you more, like – it's more, you know, it's splashy.
It pops off the page for the advertising. More. Yep.
Yeah, that's a good call. I like that. You add it all up and say they're paying for this much million. That's a good call. I'm just not a big fan of the NBA All-Star game. I could not watch.
Your boy
it.
Won the dunk
Literally
contest.
Could not watch. I watched the dunk contest. I'm a fan of the All-Star festivities. I watched the entire Saturday night. Well, I didn't watch the beginning. I watched the 3-point shootout. I watched the Steph, and I watched the slam dunk competition.
That's all you really needed to see.
Yeah, all the stuff before that doesn't really interest me a whole lot. I love the 3-point contest, and I don't love that they added all the Moneyball rack, and I don't love that they added the Moneyball spot. I wish they would go back to the old traditional way,
Agreed.
Kind of how I feel about the home run derby. Call me a purist. Slam dunk competition, I thought it was pretty good. Like, you know, we can be critical of it, certainly. Like, I think it's silly that Mac McClung is participating in it. Mac McClung has played in 4 NBA games. Mac McClung has participated in 2 NBA slam dunk contests. I find that very weird. I don't know who that's really benefiting. But he was the best dunker that night.
God, he can fly.
He was easily the best dunker.
Yeah, there's no doubt about the fact that he is the master of his craft when it comes to dunking. But then I watched him in the Rising Stars Challenge, and I actually realized he still has some game. I mean, he actually had in the first game they played, he had a majority of their points. He was scoring inside and outside, and I was like, okay, he has more game left than I thought, because he went to Georgetown, he bounced around schools. Everybody, he was an internet sensation, but all it was
dunking.
I saw him
at Tech. Yeah, we played him at Tech.
Is that right? Yeah. And so I was like, well, maybe someone could – he has a chance to be at the back end of someone's roster. But I thought the bigger thing of the dunk contest was Jaylen Brown did it. And obviously he was a little petty because he was trying to prove that he had a left hand, because he was wearing a glove on it with sparklies.
Which was a terrible windmill, by the way.
Yeah.
Like,
but
he was trying for the windmill, and it was like a 30% windmill.
The reason why I like it, no matter what he did dunking, was he's the biggest name they've had in a while. And because of it, and because of the broadcasters getting on it, John Morant came out and said, I'm going to consider it now going forward. You get a couple of the younger guys that can really fly that are big, big names. And obviously Ja has a lot to gain, too, to try and resurrect his image. But if Ja would get into the contest, Zion could possibly get into the contest. You get some of the young guys that can do these kind of dunks, that now you could bring the contest back.
And that's really the key, because we've had years past where Dwight Howard, Blake Griffin, those guys were in it, and those dunk contests were a lot of fun. But if you don't have the guys that people know, then it's...
The clout counts. No matter how much Matt McClung can do and how he might be the greatest dunker on the planet...
Who you put it on the headline. You know,
he doesn't have the name
Which
that carries it.
Which four would you? If you could pick your four, which four are you going with?
Anthony Edwards, John Morant.
Jaw's down mine for sure.
Yep.
I wouldn't mind seeing Giannis.
I just don't think he can do enough flash because he's just so freaking long that he could dunk standing up almost.
Yeah, but you throw length in with his like leaping ability, he could do some things that maybe we don't see.
Who else am I missing that are high flyers?
Jaw would be number one on my list.
Yeah, Ja, Zion, Anthony Edwards, and there's got to be someone I'm missing. But those, did you put those three in?
Boban.
It's a good start. Who?
Boban.
No.
You don't want Boban.
They were lobbying for Karl Anthony Towns last night because he had a couple of reverses when he had 30 in the fourth quarter. Stop it.
You need star power. Completely agree. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP, listener. Who's your dream for the slam dunk contest? Also, Kenyon Green posted on his bio today that he's a right tackle only. I'm sorry, that was Titus Howard. Kenyon Green, last year, didn't play a game. People are already calling him a bust. How critical it is for the Texans to make a decision on Kenyon Green right now. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.